This is the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and this weekend, Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 7:30, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30, the Madison Symphony will be presenting an all-Gershwin concert with Gershwin's Cuban Overture and also selections from Porgy and Bess, and that will feature soprano Michelle Johnson and baritone Eric Green with the Madison Symphony Chorus. And the centerpiece for the concert, George Gershwin's Concerto in F, to be played by my guest, Felipe Anconi. Welcome back to the Midday.
Thank you.
Let's see, last time we decided, it took us a while to figure out, last time was the
Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto. It was 8 years ago, 2017.
And then back around 2013, the Brahms Powerful Second Piano Concerto.
That's correct.
And this time the Gershwin. And now I remember, one thing I remember about the Brahms was audience applauded after the first movement. Mm-hmm. And that was because, I mean, they knew that that was not customarily the thing to do, but they were just so taken with your performance of just the first movement alone, they applauded. But I have also seen, Philippe, that you have a special feeling, attitude towards silence in a performance. So how do you...
Oh, really?
Yes. Well, somebody said that you did. I mean, and in terms of, you know, there's this description of a fermata of silence before and after a piece.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
in the middle, that's a little bit different sometimes in a concerto. So how do you feel about applause between movements?
Well, you know, it's a fairly recent tradition that we shouldn't applaud between movements. It goes back to the 20th century, actually. But, you know, in the 19th century, the audiences used to applaud all the time. And the composers who performed their own pieces didn't mind at all. Actually, they were excited because it was a sign that the audience was really enjoying the piece and the interpretation. And then things got really strict, you know, throughout the 20th century. And there was this rule that people should not applaud until a piece with three, four, sometimes five movements was completely over. And that's fine. But in very recent years, audiences have started applauding again, especially, you know, after a fiery ending of a first movement for a concerto. And I think that's okay. I'm not, you know, it doesn't really bother me. Of course, it's nice when you end a movement very quietly. You know, you have this wonderful poetic atmosphere. And it's really nice if the audience doesn't move, doesn't clap or anything, because you can stay for a few seconds in this atmosphere. And I like that a lot.
How would you apply Gershwin's Piano Concerto in F to this thinking?
Well, very typically, the end of the first movement is very exciting. So if they applaud, I won't be offended or anything. You know, I'll be happy, actually. Now, the second movement is so poetic, this blues, this wonderful atmosphere, and it ends so quietly. I don't think they'll applaud there. I hope they will be taken by this wonderful...
I suppose part of that is up to the performer, though, to kind of, and the conductor, to remain in a prepared state.
Exactly. I mean, there's a way also physically to make the people understand that, you know, they shouldn't move. If you remove your hands from the keyboard a little abruptly, that's not a very good thing to do, because that would show that the thing is really over. If you don't move, if you stay like very still, then they will follow you.
Let's, before we get further into Gershwin, hear some of one of your more recent recordings, I think from, well, 2017 maybe, is when we got these WC recordings. But we may be behind the times.
Came out in 2012.
Close enough.
Yeah.
And WC, sort of the quintessential French composer, and these preludes, of course, have been recorded many times by many hands. I don't know if WC actually did. Do you know, did WC ever actually record? It would have been in the dawn of the recording age.
But he did not record the whole of the 24 preludes. But there are a few of them that he recorded on piano rolls.
Which was technology not known for its subtlety.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, if the orchestra had a string bass, they'd put in a tuba instead.
Yes.
That kind
it's
of thing.
It's interesting for tempos. But, I mean, as far as the sound is concerned, you know, it's very difficult to tell what kind of sound WC had when he was playing the piano. Yeah.
Well, this is the sound that Philippe Bianconi has playing. We'll hear several of these preludes. The first, The Dancers of Delphi. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the prelude that opens the 24 preludes, it's a slow piece. It's very solemn, you know, with a slow rhythm. And I love this piece because it really puts the listener in the state of mind to go into this adventure of the 24 preludes.
Some subtlety there that you just have to bring out. And not the kind of thing, I wonder if you could have even played WC on a piano that would have been made in 1860 or so. Would that even be possible, Philippe, to pull it off?
Maybe not that old, but there have been recordings of Debussy's music made on really early 20th century pianos, and it works beautifully. You know, as long as they're very well regulated and in optimum condition, it works beautifully, really.
How about, let's see, The Dance of Puck? That's
La Danse de Puck, you know, yeah, was inspired, obviously, by Shakespeare.
Sure, from The Tempest. Did I get that? No, Midsummer Night's Dream. And
that's correct.
What can you tell us about Debussy and Shakespeare and the Dance of Puck?
Well, you know, Debussy was inspired by many things in literature, painting, and I guess he was he wanted to write in this particular prelude something really witty, with a lot of humor, and something also kind of magical. You know, Puck is not a real.
He's not immortal.
Yeah, and I think Debussy really succeeded. It's like a fairy tale. It sounds like fairy tale music, with this beautiful dance rhythm. I think it's one of the most poetic and light and just humorous pieces that he wrote, with beautiful harmonies. Thank you.
give that a little fermata of silence at the end there, but I think it Debussy seems to call for it more than some other composers.
Exactly.
There's like, what did I just hear? Well, you just heard the Danse de Pâques from the Preludes of Claude Debussy, played by my guest, Philippe Bianconi, and we'll have a couple more of these Debussy preludes to find out about, too, from Philippe Bianconi. Jazzy effects, but not, well, I think, would you say influence, or would you just say it was in the air, these chords that would have been unusual up to that time?
Yeah, I think it was in the air. And Debussy was definitely a composer who was searching, you know, he was expanding the harmony. And at that time, he was using a lot of seventh and ninth chords, which, of course, a little bit later on were very much in use in jazz music. And I don't believe that Debussy himself had really an influence on jazz, but, you know, it was just in the air. And it's interesting to listen to Debussy's music after knowing jazz, because you think, oh, yeah, he was using some of those harmonies already.
Yes, it's fun sometimes to encounter something that seems way ahead of its time, even in a much earlier composer.
Yeah, yeah.
How about General Lavigne, one of these preludes? What's going on here?
Well, this is very funny. General Lavigne was actually American, but he lived in Paris at the beginning of the 20th century. And he was performing in cabarets, and he was playing the piano. I'm not sure exactly what he was playing, but with his feet. So, you know, it
sounds
was something really, really funny. And here Debussy uses a cakewalk rhythm. So it's this dotted rhythm, you know, that was actually also one of the original rhythms of jazz. So I think it's really interesting. And this one, again, it's very different from Puck, but it's also a humorous piece, very humorous. And some of the rhythms definitely, you know, reminds of what Gershwin is going to do 20 years later. Thank you.
Would you do it differently today? I mean, it's wonderful, but how could you improve upon it? Could you?
I don't know if I could improve it, but a few details I would do. I would do maybe a little bit differently, maybe do some contrasts a little more sharply, I think.
Well, we have time for one more, and we're listening to the music of Philippe Bianconi as he plays the preludes, some of the preludes of Claude Debussy. He'll be playing the Gershwin Piano Concerto in F with the Madison Symphony this weekend. And in the meantime, we have one of the more famous, but it's almost strikes me as being kind of atypical for Debussy, this La Fille de Chavignolin.
It's not really atypical, but it's a little out of place in the preludes. It sounds more like a piece that he would have written 15 years or 20 years earlier.
Right, yeah.
So it's like maybe something a little nostalgic, you know. It's Debussy suddenly, for a couple minutes, looking back at what he was actually composing when he was younger. And it's very interesting.
It's called in English, The Girl with the Flaxen Hair. Well, the word sublime comes to mind for The Girl with the Flaxen Hair, La Fille aux Cheveux de Lin, one of the preludes of Claude Debussy, and having recorded all of them, my guest, Philippe Bianconi, is kind of going through memory lane in terms of his recordings, too.
Yes.
But you can hear him performing live with the Madison Symphony and that Gershwin Piano Concerto in F. That's this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Overture Center for the Arts. And also, well, it's an all Gershwin program with the Cuban Overture and then selections from Porgy and Bess. Always a pleasure to be with you, Philippe Bianconi.
And a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for having me back.